And then someone went,
testing, 1, 2.
I can really taste the bacteria.
What's up, John? What's up, John Burton?
1, 2, 3, 4. Why you can't have a best?
Okay, wait. Let me rewind. John,
you're right.
All right. I'm just gonna play us in a little bit.
When are you gonna tell me we're starting?
We started.
Okay. Awesome.
And then someone went,
testing, 1, 2.
I can really taste the bacteria.
What's up, John? What's up, John Burton?
1, 2, 3, 4. Why you can't have a best?
Okay, wait. Let me rewind. John,
you're right.
All right. I'm just gonna play us in a little bit.
When are you gonna tell me we're starting?
We started.
Okay. Awesome. Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I am ready.
All right. So welcome, Lise Patoy. You have a new book. Let's pitch the book right away. So
okay.
The title of the book is Life Quest, right?
It is. It's Life Quest. Okay. Yes, absolutely.
And it's available where?
It is available for download for free on my website at lisapetrilli.com, lisapetrilli.com. So the digital version is available there. It's also available for sale on Amazon in the digital version, paperback, and hardcover. So the subtitle is Your Role in Saving the World, Revealed by Jesus.
So you did a, first off, read the book. Thank you for sending it to me.
Absolutely.
Fantastic.
It's a
great life companion.
That's a beautiful way to put it. Thank you.
Yeah, no, it really is a great life companion. My first question, because I want to speak to as large an audience as possible. A lot of your work is Jesus-centered. If I'm not Christian, Does your work still apply?
Absolutely. And I would say that my work is more than Jesus-centered. It's simply that this particular book is wisdom and information that all came in from Jesus.
Okay, so, cool. All right.
But I have other guides. I work with other energies. So I would say what I've discovered, and I believe it's because of my Catholic upbringing, all of the energies that I do work with are biblical in nature. So energies found in the Bible, like King David, like Mary Magdalene, the Virgin Mary, etc. But in this particular case, it was Jesus himself who came in the cabin in New Hampshire.
Yep. Do you, is it safe to say that your work is like a spiritual collaboration with a life coach?
That would be, yes, sure. It's, yes. Okay. And it's as well as business, because what I bring that most others don't is the executive aspect of that as well. Having been a corporate executive for the last 30 years, bringing that experience and wisdom to the table as well. So for people who are business leaders and executives and a little worried about that spirituality aspect, it's taking them to a much higher level than they ever would have gotten in the business world with a normal executive coach.
Do you have any peers in this? Like, is anybody else even in this space?
Yeah, it's so interesting you ask me that, because I had a conversation even just this morning with somebody who's doing retreats, spiritual retreats. And every time I talk to somebody who's doing that, they talk about this transformation that they're trying to encourage in these people. But the reality is people typically go on these because they're looking for some type of experience, which is wonderful. Nothing wrong with that. But nobody really asks, what are you going to transform me into?
Right.
And what's different about my work, which I think you've experienced now, is that I'm laying out a map. I'm able to identify for people, here's your highest self. Here is a pretty good image of who you are and the energy that you have the ability to tap into at your highest soul level self. And I'm going to take you from where you are now to there. And so there's a roadmap to get there.
Yeah.
Nobody else is doing that. Other people are coaching people, but who says they're not going around in circles if there's not a destination that they're headed to? And the transformation, you know, during a retreat, during a 5-day, 1-week, or weekend retreat, all wonderful, but will it last if you weren't really headed in a particular direction or working on anything specific? So I have not yet met anybody who is doing what I'm doing and doing it at the executive level as well, with the map and a plan and able to really pierce into people's soul.
Yeah.
And be able to say, "Who this is who you have the potential to be at your soul's highest level."
Which is agreed. And I think, and I wrote you because we're going to do my life map. But I think I wrote you like the first 4 years of cognitive behavioral therapy you did in like 45 minutes.
That's amazing.
With me. So it saved, I don't know how many tens of thousands of dollars. I do know what 4 years of therapy looks like. I've been in therapy, and I'm telling, like, you did like 4 years in 45 minutes, and it's such a jump start, because you're 100% right. So much time is wasted, kind of like, okay, I'm going to throw you in the pool of self-help, therapy, whatever, and you're going to swim till you maybe bump into something that resonates as true. And that is probably going to take years. I, as a therapist, am financially incentivized to make it take years.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah.
Happy swim in circle.
Exactly. We're never, the other thing that is different about what you do, tell me if you agree with this, is there's a reward. A tangible reward. There's abundance.
Absolutely.
At the end. There's abundance at the end of it, which is why the executive part is so important. Now, I don't think you have to be CEO of Fortune 500 company to benefit.
No. Right.
But if you want to know who you are and you want to be who you are in a place of abundance where everyday stresses are off of you, then I would go see you right now.
Thank
Let's start the podcast so people come see you.
I appreciate it. Absolutely. And not even really just at the end, because my clients, you know, I was with somebody this morning. It's only her third session. She said, the shift has already happened. Everything is happening immediately for me.
Yeah.
It's just once you become so much more aware and you know, I take people deep. And once I take them deep and we start letting go of things and letting go of old programming and connecting them to a much higher place, so much power opens up. So
yeah.
You can start.
And the other thing I think that happens, and we haven't touched on this, but I bet it happens, is without getting clinical, there's a shift in mental health. I don't think anybody would deny that spirituality is beneficial to mental health. So making that immediate spiritual contact gets you in another gear before the rest of it. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Cool.
Absolutely.
So how I'm trying to figure out how to say it. So a lot of your work is figuring out like what my purpose is and assisting me to get there.
Mm-hmm.
Does it detract from the process at all? I'm sure it doesn't, but explain to me how it doesn't, that I don't have like say in that like I get my purpose handed to me means I'm not like kind of creating my purpose. Does that make any sense?
Yes. So I would say I don't see it as handing you your purpose. I see it as really looking at your coding as best I can, using your soul blueprint, you know, that higher level, the ancient science of the rays, using that to look at where you have the potential to go, and then doing the best possible interpretation based on the coding. Now, you absolutely have a say. And, you know, I haven't yet had anybody say that doesn't resonate. For most people, it's like, oh my gosh, it all makes sense. And it makes sense. Now everything I've done in my life makes sense if that's where God, source, a higher power wants me headed.
Yeah.
But as we work along the way, that can be very much refined. So you absolutely have control and okay. You have free will. I mean, I'm not in control. You're the one. I'm guiding you on the path. I'm holding the light. But the truth is the work is being done directly with the divine.
Right. Right.
So what I'm helping people, you know, I'm hearing divine guidance and I'm sharing it. And at the same time, working to connect my client directly to the divine so that right. They're getting that guidance directly. So I'm there to hold the light, to make that light as bright as possible along the path. But absolutely, you've got free will, and you're going to be able to discern at each piece
right. How
best to express for yourself.
Before we get into how freaky accurate your thing with me was,
okay.
which was scary.
Scary in a good way, right?
No, scary in a very good way. I'm like, wait, does she like glow in the dark? Because this is just crazy. I kind of look too at what you do in terms of just like life performance, right? Like everybody says, everybody understands the value of like, my big thing is exercise, you know, like the value of exercise for mental health and blah, blah. I don't think anybody would debate the value of, you know, meditation or quiet time for mental health and performance. I don't think anybody would debate the value of focus and discipline in terms of self-improvement and acquiring abundance and finding your own purpose. Why is it that nobody has touched on spirituality yet? Because that just seems like such an obvious one of the five tools that you would need.
Mm-hmm.
It's strange to me that nobody has touched on that before. Like, but then again, like the best discoveries are the ones that were always right in front of you.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. Right, right. And I think to some degree, people know that that is there. They're looking for that if they're doing yoga, which might be there, you know, for them, that quiet time that you're speaking of, that meditation time. And so for some people, the meditation does give them that opportunity to have that quiet time and be open to the connection. What's different is I'm really being purposeful with people about creating that connection.
Yeah, like, because I have like a big meditation practice, but what meditation teaches you is that there's like another space, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
But then it kind of stops. What I love about, I'm blowing so much smoke at you today. What I love about what you do is, you know, like meditation teaches you, oh, there's another space. My head, there's things out there other than what's tangible. There's a dimension and I can sit in it. What I love about what you do is, well, okay, now that you know that there's another space, I think and the book for sure answers the question, okay, what's your place in that space then?
Mm-hmm.
Like it's one thing to know that there's a space out there, but it's a completely different experience to go, oh, and here's where you fit.
And let's walk into that space and see what happens.
Watch watch it rain. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. And see how we can use that space to let go of whatever you need to let go of, bring in some guidance for the future.
How did you first, like, what happened? When did you first realize your gift?
Well, I had my first what I call Joan of Arc moment. I think I may have shared this with you in 2012. And I call it my first Joan of Arc moment because her first experience was seeing and hearing the voice of Archangel Michael.
Right.
And that's what happened to me. I had somebody close to me who had been in a car accident, and I heard a voice telling me that he was being protected and they had him. And I knew it right away, it was Archangel Michael. There was no doubt in my mind. That's when it started. I had been actually working with somebody in the spiritual space before that and was told by her that I didn't have any gifts.
Oops.
Ultimately needed to extract myself from that business partnership.
Yeah.
Is what I didn't realize was she was really siphoning off my life force energy. She was using my ability to connect and my life force energy for herself. So I needed to extract myself from that. Once I did that, the voices started coming in even more. More voices, visions. I remember the first time I had a real vision, I was in my family room and I just was shown an image from what I believe is a past life, or could be interpreted as having happened in a past life because it was not in our normal modern time.
Right.
And I couldn't move until I really looked at that image and understood it and saw that there was somebody from my current life in that image. And it helped give me an understanding of our relationship.
Mm.
That was the first time. And then once I understood it, then the image went away and I could move. So it was a matter of just allowing those things to happen and opening up to them and then getting, doing more and more work, doing more and more study and spending more time every day. Got to the point where I have to do, this became part of my life, letting go of the shadows.
Mm.
Ever it was in the past that was holding me back, letting it go. And that work never really ends. As right. humans, there's always going to be something that comes up again and we realize it. But once you've done the work, you recognize it right away. You're able to do the work to let it go quickly. Whereas years ago, that might have been something that just unraveled me for a month. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I would kind of describe you as spiritually multidisciplined. Is that fair?
Sure. Thank
okay,
you.
Cool. So I've never had a vision. I've never had it. I had one time, though. Do you know about Ashtonic Records? Do you ever hear about that?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So I have a friend. Her name is Becky, and we met each other like 4 years ago, but it was one of those things where like you feel, cause you said past lives. I just wanted to run this past you. Mm-hmm. It was one of those things where like we instantly just like very comfortable. And she co-hosted the show a couple of times and she's a musician. So I was talking about like, why is this so weird? Why does this feel so comfortable? Like from the minute. So we had so I said, come on the show. We had a Ashtonic Records reader. Come on. And we're like, why are we so comfortable? This is just not romantically, just very, very.
Sure. Yeah. Oh. At a soul level. Yep.
Yeah. 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 So she goes in and she says, you two have been married like five times. And the last time you got married, you had so many kids that you both kind of were so tired at the end of it that you both just kind of agreed, next time we meet, we're just going to instantly be friends and just
that's wonderful.
But which sounds maybe a little ethereal, but when she said it, it rang like so true. I'm like, oh yeah, no, is that possible?
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. Okay. Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
Yes. I believe we come back in. Many people, I learned this, I believe it because of what I've studied. That the people who sort of led the way in this realm of study believe that we come back to continue to learn our lessons. And we often come back with the same people, just in different mm-hmm. relationships and formats. So married or working for each other or whatever that looks like.
Right.
And that we have a contract to cross paths again at that next lifetime. So whatever lesson we didn't learn in the last one, we have to keep working on that until we learn it. So it's another incentive to right. do the work now.
Right.
You know, whatever person it is in your life that is just the biggest challenge, resolve it, forgive them, do that work now to let that person go and let them go with love. And that way you are let go from that. It's almost like cutting the bond and being freed to then move forward in your life.
What would you say to people who struggle with this? I was raised Christian, Protestant, but Christian. Mm-hmm. But the idea of one life and then eternity somewhere else never rang true. Then I started studying Buddhism and I'm like, oh, wait, that makes a ton of sense. But there's so much in Christianity that mm-hmm. also makes sense. But if I believe that this, I have the one life and then it's performance based and I get judged and then we figure out where I'm going from there versus the Buddhist path, you kind of both can't be true at the same time. So how do you negotiate that? Or what would you say to people who are struggling to negotiate that?
I would say read about the development of the Bible. And there are people out there who talk about the fact, particularly for the Catholic faith, that it was a group of men who got in a room and decided what to include and what not to include.
Yep.
There seems to be evidence that at the time, you know, before that, there were references to past lives.
Mm.
But the Catholic Church, and I am Catholic. I love the Catholic Church. I love the tradition of my faith. But that to preserve the Catholic Church and to get people to pay money to be resolved of their sins, which they were doing back in the Middle Ages, you know?
Yep.
You had to believe you only got one shot.
Right, right.
You had to go through them.
Yeah.
So, you know, in the book, Jesus does talk about the fact that if you are devoted to religion, that they rejoice in that devotion. He was coming in to share more information just to help expand upon those who are religious but are still looking and still seeking.
Right.
And also to help those who haven't found a religion, who are just seeking that divine love and to be seen and known. And he was coming in to serve as that, not to take away from anything from a religious perspective, simply to add to it.
This never happens on this show, but there's so much here that I'm going to read a question from a piece of paper. So I apologize. I'm not an actor. It's going to sound hard.
Okay.
So you write a lot about abundance, right? And you write that it flows from the heart, not the mind. How do you make that shift? Because we're so mind centered. Like, what's the trick to making a shift to even having the confidence to follow your heart?
Oh gosh, doing the work. It's an act of faith.
So at some point, you got to leave.
Faith and believing in yourself.
Okay. That makes sense. All right. Let me see if I can stump you with this one then. So my daughter just went to college, so I'm big on this one. You write about childhood and you say that parents hold a sacred responsibility for teaching faith, hope, and love, right?
That's what came through, right?
Yeah. What's the best way to teach, like, I can teach love by showing it. I can teach hope by having it. Faith is trickier.
Mm.
Because it's so internal, right? So how would I teach faith? Like you'll see me loving you, so you'll know what that is. You'll see if there's something going on that you'll see my hope. You'll see me act out of that. But faith is so internal, like it's harder to, how do you teach that?
Conversation, but also in what you just said about hope. I think our children see how we handle difficult situations. And there's a difference between hope and faith. You know, that opening, that faith of just surrendering to the complete unknown and uncertainty of it.
Right.
But the conversation with the child, I know God's watching me, or I know that the angels are doing everything they can to unfold a really beautiful path from here for me. How we process that shares our faith. And I also think young children, at least this is what I've learned in study, young children come in able to more easily connect to angels. And often we think they've got make pretend friends or whatever, but possibly they're actually seeing something that we have grown out of our ability to see.
Yeah.
So not diminishing that, encouraging that. And if they're expressing faith in some way, to encourage that through conversation.
So much of it is just getting started.
Yeah.
One thing that resonated with me was the idea of the lower self. And swimming in that, if you were to give somebody so much of this is momentum, right? Just do that first thing, and then you catch a little win, and then you can do the next, right? First thing? What's the first thing you would have me do, or anybody do, to get that little win so that for proof of concept?
Oh gosh, well. In regard to spirituality and
getting out of that lower level and just saying hey, listen.
Understanding that in order to get out of the lower level, the lower self is where we master our physical body, our emotional body, and our mental body. So essentially, we control our body instead of our body's natural human base urges controlling us. Do we get into those urges or do we control our body? Do we control our emotions or do they control us? And do we control the thoughts that go into our head, or do our thoughts control us and cause us to spiral? The most important thing to understand is that in order to shift out of this level to a higher level, we have to have shifted at least half of our personality from ego-based to heart-based, more like 55%. So the work is letting go of the ego and just stepping into the heart.
What's the difference between ego and heart?
Ego is self-centered. It is I, it is me. Heart-based is the good of all, including me, but the good of all. Being a lot more outwardly focused, not doing something just to get the promotion or the raise or whatever for myself, doing it for the good of the team. The good of the company.
It's so counterintuitive, though, isn't it? By the way, you're 100% right, and I found that even in my own life. Every time I do something that's John based, maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. Every time I do something that's community, global based for somebody or family based or whatever, always much better results. But it's so counterintuitive that the best thing to do for yourself is not do stuff for yourself.
Do stuff for the good of all, including yourself.
Yes. Yeah.
Because hopefully, let's say you did something really big with an organization, a volunteer organization. Hopefully you get joy from that. So you're doing it for yourself. But in doing whatever that is, let's say for you, you're a musician. So playing for this organization.
Right.
People see you. They're attracted to you. You're in so much joy that you magnetize people to you. And suddenly they're coming to you and saying, hey, I want you to play at this other event. And they're paying you for that. And you're meeting people. They come up to you afterwards and you never know who you're going to meet and what, where that connection is going to lead you. So if you were just doing something for yourself, I don't have time for that. And you stayed home that Saturday versus doing. And now you've got all these paths that have opened up. Because you opened up your heart.
Is it hard? This is a personal question. Is it hard for you because you operate on and this is because of the whole map that you did for me. Because you can see things, because you have a gift, is it hard for you interpersonally to have a relationship or whatever? Because there's always, if I could always see truth and my wife, and my wife was telling me whatever. And I knew that she never lies, but I knew there was 80% truth, 20% agenda in there. I'd be like, oh, I can see the 20% agenda. I'm going to have to do the exercise of ignoring the 20%. Do you struggle with that because you see things bigger?
I don't, mostly because I turn that off. Not that I turn it off. I just, when I'm in relationships, in a situation, let's say, with having lunch with friends, I'm not trying to listen to the voices. Very different from when I'm in a situation with a client where all of that that I'm receiving is really important. They're paying me to share that information. They've given me permission to share right. that information and to help them connect. So it's a different relationship. I think the hardest is with my kids because, you know, as a mother, it's really hard to, but that's gotten better over time. And as I mentioned to you, you know, I had that really difficult situation with that person years ago and they saw that. And so they're protective of me. And so it was difficult for them to open up to the fact that I was actually receiving what they thought this person had. And that's been the biggest challenge is them being open to mom's guidance, not being normal mom guidance. But with everybody else, I don't. It's just, it's not a part of my relationship unless somebody's asked me, do you see anything? Or can you help me? Sometimes people call, I have a son who needs some healing. Can you help with that?
Right.
And because of the ancient science of the rays that I work with, I'm able to help in many cases. So.
Okay. The rays. You got time to go through the rays with me? So there's, all right, cool. Can you explain like the basic premise of that?
So the rays are actual rays of light.
Okay.
They are fractals of light from source. So a fractal in science is a mirror or a reflection of the whole.
Right.
So they are a reflection of the light of source. And they're present when we're born. They're always present. And they code us in a particular way. And there are seven of them that are really the building blocks of the universe. We have come to learn. Those who study know that there's now 12 that are universally accepted.
12, okay.
I've been shown there are infinite rays, infinite types of rays with different energy.
Because it's a spectrum.
It's a spectrum. Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And these are the main building blocks, the seven that we work with. There's 12 at a higher level. So at a higher level, we can bring in, you know, more rays and use them in different ways. But understanding how light imprinted on us is important and can help us. So, for example, I had a client who was dealing with some physical issues. So she was working to master her physical body. And we were using the rays that have imprinted her physical body to help her. To help her do the work that she needs to do to overcome that. And it was amazing how just knowing that she could use them gave her this feeling of so much more power in the situation.
Mm. Right, right.
Yeah.
There's so much here. God. You talk about love being the ultimate currency, right?
Jesus talks about it. I mean, the book is all, it just came through. It's what he has said. So yes, he has said love is the greatest currency.
I imagine that would be a hard thing for people to accept because I think people think of time as the ultimate currency.
We are so stuck in our third dimensional world of time and space.
Right, right.
But if you're someone who's looking more universally.
Yeah.
Love is the greatest 100%. Currency.
So, can you write about sovereignty too. Can you explain what sovereignty is?
Sovereignty is owning your power and understanding that we are divinely gifted our power. It's interesting when you look at like when King Charles was crowned, they are saying that he, you know, God has chosen him for this. And we as humanity are putting the crown on his head and agreeing to the fact that he's divinely crowned by God.
Right.
And what Jesus is saying in the book is stop doing that. Nothing against King Charles. He seems to be a lovely man, but start putting the crown on your own head and step into your own power and know that you don't have to give your power away to kings and queens and others.
Yeah.
You are divinely granted your own sovereignty, your own connection to God, your own godly power, your free will. In no way meant to be interpreted as anarchy or anything like that, just that we have for 2,000 years given our power away to rulers. And certainly having a functioning government is critical, but recognizing that in doing so, we shouldn't also forget or take away our own ability to step into our highest power, which is truly connecting to ourselves, expressing ourselves at our divine highest possible power as we go through our lifetime.
This is why I love you, because you just ripped off my question. So my question was, okay, so I understand, like, if just because things are so crazy right now, I get, like, on a personal level, developing my own sovereignty. But if I was, like you said, a ruler or a president or whatever, how would I lead so that people would have their own sovereignty instead of, right? I mean, they almost seem antithetical.
Well, I mean, think about what Jesus said. He said, but put your crown on from your higher heart, not from your ego. So it's imploring leaders to lead from their heart for the good all, not for their ego, for their own power, to stay in power, whatever that looks like. If you truly are doing it from your higher heart for the good of all, that means everybody on all sides of the aisle or political spectrum. So you're working with as many people as possible to make sure, I know you can't always please everybody, but that you're genuinely trying to do the best for everyone involved. You're trying to help all.
Right.
And they're, you know, how often do people get so stuck in their ego that they want to do it their way instead of really seeking to understand what everyone else is going through? And, you know, in our country, and I can't speak to other countries, but as you know, the media truly seeks to divide. And if you really want to understand all sides to an issue, you can't watch just one news channel. You have to seek news from a variety of sources to understand the nuance and understand how people with a different upbringing see things differently.
Right.
And that's something I really try to help my children understand, is it's one thing to have your, you know, opinions and feel strongly about them, but always seek to understand why the other side feels the way they do. And often it's because people were just raised differently. And if you're raised in a culture, whether that be the northeast part of the country or the southern part of the country or the west coast, there's different cultures. There's different cultures based on where we come from. And typically we hear a story or we're told things in a particular way as we grow up. And then we go out in the world and it's hard to be open to other ideas and to think that, well, maybe mom and dad told me a story that might not be true, or there's another way to look at this. And so just being open to that is hard for people if you've grown up with a particular culture. And so that's why I really work hard with my children to help them be open to at least understand, always seek to understand why people feel differently. And it's typically not because they're bad people, which we tend to project onto the other side, but rather they just screw up in a different way.
Yeah.
And so they see things differently.
I always talk about, like, I agree with you, and I always talk about, like, Native Americans that way. Like, Native Americans view the natural earth as God, right? And I'm like, yeah, if I'm in Wyoming and I see all this splendor, I absolutely am going to think and operate that the world is my God because it's beautiful. If I'm in Antarctica, I'm going to look at the inside of my igloo as people. So even like where you are shapes.
Yes.
Shape.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Walk me through the two families, the on abundance. The two families. One family resentful but wealthy. One family humble but full of love. Is the message there like
abundance isn't about money. It's not about how much money is in the bank.
Right.
That may be a measure of financial wealth. But not abundance. Abundance, what he was saying was the heart has to be involved. And it's an expression of love. So you can simply be, you could be someone who doesn't have a dollar to your name, but be living in abundance because there's so much joy and love in your heart. And as you're walking through the street, that's, you're just in a state of abundance because that joy and love is all you know.
Right. Okay, this is going to get a little out there. So I've read the Bible cover to cover three times. I went to school to be a pastor. So I read the Bible cover to cover. I never got to seminary, but I went. I was pre-sem in undergrad.
Wow.
And I always looked at the Bible as like, okay, you're telling me the story. You're telling me what somebody said. And that, and I'm a person that's always going to be, it's going to be interpreted through me. I'm going to get parts wrong. I'm going to blah, 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 blah. There's almost nothing in the Bible where somebody says like, hey, this is what God told me. The only time I can think of is like the Ten Commandments when Moses comes down and goes, hey, God gave me this.
Right.
You ever see that scene in a Mel Brooks movie, History of the World? Where Moses walks down and he's got three tablets and he goes, the Lord gave me these 15. And then he drops and he smashes and he goes, 10, come on.
Yeah, it rings a bell, but I can't say that I could tell you the details of that scene. Oh, but I get it. I love that.
right? I almost, without getting heretical, I almost think there's more value in a book where somebody says like, look, this is what Jesus told me. Like, not what I saw, not trying to create word for word something I heard in speech, which I'm never going to get right. But just say, hey, like, this is something. Just, I think they're of equal value. What do you think?
I would like to think so. No, I'm not going to say that it's, I mean, the Bible is the Bible, and it's to be revered for so many reasons. I will say that as it came through, I wrote it as it came through. If I was confused or thought that it could be misinterpreted as maybe he was saying something that could be, for example, about abortion or something. Are you sure you want to go there? Are you sure you want me to say that? I would always be asking to make sure that I was really being true to what was coming through.
Right.
So I did take it very seriously to make sure it was an accurate reflection of this conversation. And I do think it could be considered sort of a new chapter of the Bible for our modern world. Because it's so hard to, with the Bible, you can, I think as part of, it's so fascinating, the timing with Charlie Kirk, it can be interpreted in different ways. And we can debate the different ways it could be interpreted. And the thing about what he was sharing in this experience with me was that it was coming through in a way that I think most people can understand it just in the way it comes through.
How did you know when you were done with the book?
I said, is there anything else? And he said, no.
That's a good way.
True story. Is there anything else? And I would get to the end and sometimes it was exhausting. Is there anything else? And then, yes, okay. And, more would come in. And when I finally said, is there anything else? And
did you go to Jesus? People have an attention span. I got to cut it off.
I mean, like I said, it was New Hampshire. It was springtime.
Yeah.
It was filled with snow when I arrived. By the time I left, it was springtime. But when I first got there, I would try to go for a walk every day just to get out of the cabin and get fresh air. And I'd be walking with so many layers and gloves. And then I'd be walking and I'd hear him start talking. I'm like, oh my God, you know, try to pull out my phone. I got to get my gloves off. So it's like, wait, don't say it so fast. I got to capture this. So,
right.
It, you know, that type of experience as well. So,
all right. This map thing that you did, which was just, I told you, like, I got to get off the phone because I needed a day just to
think through it. Yeah.
One of the things I'm fascinated by, that your visuals are stunning.
Thank you.
Okay, is there a philosophy behind that? Because like I'm looking at what you sent me, and I'm like, oh my God, yes, there's text, but it's art. I mean, it's gorgeous. Is there a philosophy behind that?
No, I have an amazing team, marketing team. Amazing designer.
You do, man. I'm like, wait, I don't know whether to read what you just wrote me or to just look at the picture for a few minutes. It's hard to.
It's the same imagery as from the website, so,
right.
Which is all designed to help people feel the energy of the journey.
Yeah.
It's a truly divine journey. It's a journey with the divine. There's pictures of me holding the lantern. I'm the light bearer. I'm holding the light for you.
Right.
On this journey, which, you know, was going to have ups and downs, and I'm going to be there holding the light, but the journey's with the divine. And so the imagery is truly divine because that's what's coming through. So thank you for saying that because it's all divine to help you understand that
we're taking this
really seriously. Yeah.
Yeah. So listener, what Lisa did is she sat down and she said, okay, I'm going to look at John and I'm going to go wherever Lisa goes to do this stuff. And I'm going to come back with like, hey, here's your strengths. Here's your weaknesses. Here's your purpose. Here's your role. Here's your place. We then spent like 45 minutes going through it. It shook me. It was like so accurate. Some of the stuff, if you have the internet, yeah, you could probably figure out. Some of the stuff, you have to have either lived inside my chest for 40 years or somebody told you it because it rang so true. And it's a process worth going through because it's a document handed to you that kind of tells you what your heart is and kind of fills in the blanks. Like, hey, I know you struggle with this, but your purpose is this, and we can do both at the same time. And I have a lot of, you know, we do a lot of like mediums on the show and astonic readers and blah, blah, because I think all that stuff's interesting. But most of the time that stuff is like, all right, you have the internet. I get it. You like a third, you know, a third of what you're saying is from the home from your website and blah, blah, blah. This was completely different from all of that. What's your process for creating that? And listener, hire this woman to do it for you. Give yourself that one gift because it really is just, even if you just stop there and even if all you want is the power to know what you're supposed to be doing, what your purpose is, and to have one other human being on earth understand like what's crawling around inside you, that's worth the price of admission.
Thank you. Thank you.
But what's your process? How do you do that?
I don't use the internet. It's based on the coding, like I said. So I'm.
But how do you get my coding? Like, do you meditate? Do you pray? Do you like, how do you get my coding?
That's a good question. So both. So the coding, so I have a way. So I used your birthday, right? So that's what I was looking at. So I'm looking at where were you born? What was happening when you were born light-wise? How does it code you? What does that mean? So I'm able to interpret that. So that's just a unique capability from all of my years of study and the divine guidance. So I'm also looking at it all, looking at it, you know, close up and then stepping back and saying, okay, big picture, if I just look at it this way, what else comes through that I would want to share? And then asking for divine guidance. And as you know, divine guidance comes through with a message, I just write it as it comes. Sometimes, typically, it's different people. The last one I did, it was Mary Magdalene. Virgin Mary comes through. St. Thomas came through recently for the first time. It's likely somebody who may be a guide or a special angel, maybe, to that person who comes through. And like I said, I write down what I receive and I share it, and it's always resonated with the person receiving it. So
yeah.
It's just a combination of looking at the coding and then asking for that divine guidance.
Do I get the book first and then do that, or do I do the map first and then go to the book?
Totally up to that person. Totally. I mean, the book really does lay out that larger idea of your life quest and your journey and why it's so important right now. But either way, if somebody's ready, knows they're ready to do the work, knows that there's a calling for them to go to a higher level, you know, you could get the book, you could download the book and create a call with me on the same day. So
I would do that because having read both, the map was so jarringly accurate, like jarringly accurate, that the book would give me context for that.
Okay.
I almost wish I had done them on the same day. Because the book gives you, like, if somebody said, okay, Lisa's going to show up, you're a 62-year-old man, Lisa's going to show up and finally tell you what's up, I would like to know, like, how she got there first, because it's so on the nose. And I'm like, wait a second, is she too holy that I should not be speaking to her? because it was that on the nose.
Wow.
Yeah. So I think the book kind of, like, If you do the book, I think if you do the book, it will kind of explain, like, okay, this is how she gets so accurate. But I think if you do the book without the map, you're doing yourself a disservice, because the book's like a manual of how stuff works, but you don't know what the stuff is until you do the map, and then you're like,
right. Well, and to give yourself some credit, John, it takes courage to say, I want to know what she's going to say. You know, if somebody said to you, she's going to show up and what did you say? Tell you what's up.
Yeah.
You were willing to hear it. So many people are not at that place.
Which takes
courage.
It does. I mean, we know each other. So I had, like, a little bit of an advantage prior in that. Like, I knew you already had street cred with me anyway. So I kind of knew, it was crazy. Do you, did you do a map for yourself?
Yes. 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 Yeah. And it's, you know, if I, part of me wishes I had it when I was little.
Right.
So that I could have spent many more years with clear direction at the same time. Our path is our path for a reason. And all those lessons I learned during those years, I'm able to leverage now. So I was going to have to learn those lessons one way or another.
Right.
So
I'm fascinated at somebody who's tuned into, tuned in at such a high level spiritually, who can also walk down a C-suite hallway and interact with anybody on there. That is that difficult for you? Cause
no, but keep in mind, it's not difficult for me at all in the corporate world. I wasn't really sharing that, you know, this other side. So with the book really coming out, I was certainly using all these past many years while I've been an executive coach, I was certainly using this to help me with the coaching, but I wasn't being open about what I was doing is at a much higher level. In a very public way. And I certainly wasn't laying I was doing standard executive coaching the way executive coaching is expected to be versus now saying, look, I can lay out a map for you, like we've talked about.
Yeah.
And instead of just coaching you based on what you want to work on today, let's get you to a place. And the way to get you to that place is to know exactly how high we can take you and what you need to work on along the way and check it all off and make sure we don't miss anything. And if you, we all have a core wound that we're working on. And if we just skip over that because you never want to work on it, well, that's not going to get you where you need to go. So
right.
I don't know of any other process where there's this whole list of exactly all the things we're going to make sure we cover and we resolve and, you know, help you rise above. And certainly as things come in along the way, great, we'll resolve those too. We meet a couple wolves along the way, we'll deal with the wolves. But we're not going to forget the core wound and the other things that are, you know, that were there.
Your process mirrors traditional cognitive behavioral therapy. This is my opinion, but does it a little bit better. Because your idea of mastering the lower self first, I think that's something that cognitive behavioral therapy misses. If you are physically out of alignment, whether it's an addiction or it's a predication towards whatever, if you're physically out of alignment, I don't care who's sitting in front of you for an hour, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, nothing's going to resonate until that gets addressed.
Right.
And the premise for cognitive behavioral therapy was, okay, well, that's what medication is supposed to do. Medication is supposed to align that lower level so that now you're receptive to therapy. Sometimes it does. Sometimes it doesn't. But what I like about your premise is, you know, let's not start with what your core wound is. Let's get you in a place first, whether we got to get control of your mind, your body, or Holy
right.
Spirit, let's get you in a place where you can first take this. And that's why I think it would be like important to work with you personally too, because I probably we were doing it for the show, but I, knowing what I know now, I would have spent a couple hours with you first. So that when you finally told me what's up, I'd be like, oh, okay, I can take it. Cause like I said, I'm like, oh, this is just so spot on that I need a minute. Does that make any sense?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
What do you do for fun?
I play with my grandson. He's adorable.
That's cool. Do you work out at all?
A little bit. It's not as a little bit. I walk everywhere. It's not something that I'm like big into.
Right.
In a major way. Having said that, I had a kidney transplant 18 years ago.
Did you really?
I did. Yes. And so that was my physical challenge to overcome.
Yeah.
And so I work very hard to have a life that supports this new opportunity. You know, this, I know I'm here for a reason.
Right.
And so I take good care of my body. So
what
I'm in good physical condition.
you look great. What do you eat?
Yeah. What?
What do you eat? Like what? Like,
oh, you don't want to know what I eat.
I do.
But here's the thing: having had a kidney transplant, I learned during dialysis to eat what my body was craving, and just eat a little bit of it. And so I eat almost anything. I just pay attention to what my body's asking for, and I eat that. If it wants a cookie, I eat a cookie. I don't eat the whole box of cookies. I don't deprive myself of cookies so that when I finally have a cookie, I eat the whole box. If I want a cookie, I eat a cookie. If I want a chip, I eat a chip. If I feel like, wow, I really need some pork. So it's just really being, I've become really attuned to what my physical body is saying it needs. So,
do you... I think that's like a large part of mental health or self-improvement that's overlooked. And I completely agree with you. mastery over your body is not denying it what it wants. Mastery over your body is regulating what it wants. So like you said, a cookie instead of the box.
Right.
That's mastery over your body. Denial isn't mastery.
No, because it means you don't have control.
Right, right. Yeah.
You're so afraid. You've denied because you're so afraid of what would happen if you actually let yourself have that. So you don't have control. Right.
Do you think you have learned everything you need? Is this your last life? Do you think you've learned it all now?
Who knows? I think that's a possibility for me. But I think I like to think that I still have many years to go. And there may be a time when you're going to come back and do something else for some reason. Right. I think that's an option for us. I think when we get to a certain place, we have the option to not come back or to say we want to come back and help in a different way or help in a specific way.
What's one thing you didn't have in the book that you might have a second thought about and say, I should have put that in?
Well, I wouldn't, just because nothing else came through. He's like, no, that's it. But at the end, I'm alluding to something that I'm really passionate about, which is the rise of the divine feminine.
Right. Right. Is that the next book?
It seems to be. I haven't started. I shouldn't say that. I have a book on the shelf that I wrote for business women about the rise of the divine feminine. Looking at that book now, I would rewrite it. And that may be what comes next, possibly. We'll see.
Selfishly, what's the divine masculine?
The divine masculine?
Yeah.
So we each, within us, have masculine energy and feminine energy.
Right.
Or energies that are described as masculine, very directive, analytical energies. Feminine energy being creational, the power to create. To receive, the flow is feminine. The straight line is masculine. When we're in our lower feminine or our lower masculine, it means we're in those energies in our lower self. And I think that is what has led to this conversation about toxic masculinity. It's about the masculine in its base lower self, wanting to control others, ego related, self-power related. Anything you see men doing that we think is toxic is lower masculine energy put to a very bad use. Women have masculine energy as well. And so women can be, you know, using their masculine energy in a toxic way as well. It's not about one or the other. It's about the energy. When we are able to raise that energy to a higher level and be heart-centered, a man in his divine masculine, instead of his lower masculine, is being honorable. He might be in war, but he's being an honorable warrior. He's following the rules of war. He's not doing horrible things to the women of the village or whatever that is. Not that there should be war, but I'm just saying, you know, there's the knight in shining armor who's the honorable warrior, and then there's the lower aspect of that. There's the divine masculine is protecting their family, looking out for the good of all. Volunteering, selfless giving, all of that. But the same for women as well. So being in our divine feminine is being creational, for the good of all, creating something wonderful and beautiful for the good of all, not just for the good of ourselves.
Is there such a thing as toxic femininity?
Sure, it'd be. What do you see on all those reality TV shows where women go after each other?
There it is. Yep, that's right. Do you foresee a way, again, Selvi, you're such a resource. Do you foresee a way to create other teachers instead of just teaching?
Yes, absolutely.
Franchising.
Yeah, That's absolutely where I would love to be able to get to, hopefully have clients who want to do that long term. Absolutely. Or others who just, oh, I'm sorry?
Would they have to be clients or like I can kind of see you training clergy. I would love to see you training clergy.
That's a really interesting idea. But they'd have to be a client in the sense that they'd have to understand the process.
Yeah,
they'd have to be open to you know, understanding it and experiencing it. But that's really interesting.
Yeah, because like I've known a lot of clergy. And there's like the teachings from the clergy are almost always like, this is the moral decision or this is the doctrinal decision. There's never the, hey, I talk to God all the time. I went and this is what I was told. You never get that. And I think that's such a waste of service that somebody that like, and I would love to see somebody like you teach clergy, like there's a third leg to this tripod. Like, yes, there's some doctrine we have, and there's some doctrine. And yes, there's a moral code that comes from that doctrine. But there's also like, you know, there's also like, just go to God and ask the question. And people will say, well, you know, yeah, you need to pray on that. Praying on something takes, it's asking somebody to run before they walk almost. Like, you know, like you have to develop the ear to hear what's coming back.
Exactly. Well, you have to develop the channel. You have to open yourself up as a channel to hear. Absolutely. Yeah, to receive.
Sorry, musician mistake. I called it in here. But
no, that's okay. It's just, it's hearing with the heart.
Yeah. But
hearing with the heart, seeing with the heart. Yeah.
I wish you would teach a course at seminary and just say like, look, there's a way here, you know, we talk about interacting with God and communication with God, and then we drop it and make it a very independent thing. Like, this is how you do it though. Like, I think that would be super valuable. Not to give you more work, but.
That's a wonderful idea. I had not considered that. So you've got me thinking of something new. That's fascinating.
Yeah.
And it's true that, I mean, the Bible does speak of the angel Gabriel comes to the Virgin Mary, right? And no one seems to have an issue with the fact that she sees him and hears him and has a conversation with him.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, the same thing with, you know, not to get all doctrinal, but the same thing with Satan. Like Jesus and Satan had a 40-day Super Bowl. But then there's not much teaching about how in that faith, there's not that much teaching about how do you handle Satan when he shows up? And, you know, like just how to develop a spiritual channel.
And could you look at those 40 days as the time he spent mastering his lower self?
You could, I for a long time thought Jesus and Buddha are the same person because they both did the same thing. They both had to go wander out, confront their lower self, and come back and say, this is kind of what I learned. Like, I wonder about that sometimes. That's a weird parallel.
They're both master teachers?
Yeah.
Both in some sense, including even the Virgin Mary, the hero's journey that we all go through.
Do you struggle? You say that you can turn it off. Do you struggle with that, though? Like, you think, like, I should probably never turn it off because there's so much valuable stuff coming? Or
Sometimes I ask myself if I should just be always, but it's just not human for me. Now, maybe for others, for me, it's not humanly possible to pay attention to it all the time.
Do you handwrite or type?
I handwrite.
You handwrote that book?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
God
yes.
bless,
and then type, but yes. Oh,
right,
yes,
right.
Yes.
I think everybody should handwrite everything they do first because there's a drag and it gives you that extra third of a second every word to make sure that you are giving it like a full thought. Like I type so fast, like I could write four paragraphs and not know what I said. I can't do that with handwriting.
And I think when you write, you experience it. Now it might just be our generation. That's what we were taught.
Yeah, but I mean, there is something to. I think.
Power.
Do Do you journal?
I do. I do. Absolutely. Every day.
You have a daily practice? When do you do it?
Definitely in the morning, sometimes okay. at night as well. But yes, everything that's coming through. Who knows if I'll publish all of that someday, but yes, that I do.
Okay, stop stealing my questions. That was the next question. Would you ever, that would be fascinating to hear, like, you know, to hear what you receive without an editor and without like a marketing consideration or, you know.
Right. Some of what comes through, I put onto, you know, Instagram. I have on Instagram every day, you know, a little quote or with a picture. So that's always coming through in that type of session. But
what's your Instagram handle?
My name?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well.
Yes, it's my name, Lisa Petrillo.
What? One of us in this conversation is smart, and it's apparently not me. So. What's your vision for the future of all this? We're in such a crazy time, and you work on such a different plane. I have the view from the ground. What's the view from where you are?
Well, I'm in the same place you are, on the same planet you're on. My hope.
Kinda.
What I'm being guided to do is, like I said, guided to take humanity on their life quest. To take leaders who are having a massive impact and get them to a much higher place so that they're taking the world to a higher place and find a way to get, you know, get the book to as many people as possible so it helps as many people as possible to help this whole leadership realm understand that mind mastery, which so many are focused on, is absolutely critical, but it's not the end. It's not the highest place to get to. There's a whole other path above that that we can work on in this lifetime as humans. And that's a really important place to go, is to connect to our soul level
right.
and to seek to be guided by a higher level and to seek to be in our heart as much as possible for the good of all, having faith that that's going to lead to a path that opens up before us of abundance and being willing to be open to the idea that we truly are all one.
Mm.
And each of us is divine, as a divine reflection of God as well.
Do you think we ever went to the moon?
Yes. I like to think so.
That disappoints me. Shoot, I want to ask wise people, and I think you're wise, if we ever like really went to the moon.
You don't think we went to the moon? Okay.
No, I can make the argument for you. You ready?
I'm sure. Yeah, I believe you. I believe you. I'm also an idealist, though. I just want to believe. I always want to believe the best. I always want to just.
That's a good way to live. That's a good way to live.
Yeah.
What the purpose of pets? Like, I've always wanted to ask you this. Like, pets are like, do you think like dogs, for example, or pets, like a connection with a pet? Do you think there's a spiritual element to that as well?
I think there probably is, and I think they come into our life for a reason at a certain time. Absolutely. And it's so interesting to see how easy it is for some people to express love to a pet.
Yeah.
Because there's no chance of being rejected, right?
There's no chance of being rejected, and there's no chance of being asked anything back, right?
And so there's no risk. And
yeah.
Yet we're so afraid to do that with each other.
Was it hard for you, speaking of risk, was it hard for you to like be like this uber successful C-suite executive coach and then make the decision like, I'm gonna open the thing up all the way, and it'll gain me some years, but it may cost me some years. Was that hard?
Absolutely. This whole thing has been a risk. Yes.
Yeah.
Just sending the book out there it's a risk because people don't know me that way.
Right.
And I know they're going to judge me. And well, I have to let go of any attachment to that.
On the other hand, you have so much street cred in that world that I think it lends credibility to this next message, maybe.
Absolutely. And for people in that world who know they're called to something more, I'm the kind of person who can help them. Because I understand the world they're living in, and I can also show them.
Do you find that in your work? And I imagine you do, where, like, if I was Lisa Petrilli, I would probably sit down with Bill Gates, and I would probably say, like, look, I'm about to say a bunch of stuff you already know. So let's just skip to the part where you get brave enough to buy into it. Does that make any sense?
Yes. Yes. Right? I know I'm going to be asked to start having those conversations. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. That's, makes sense.
Do you pray for anything?
I pray for anything.
Do you pray for a car? Do you pray for anything physical? Do you pray for somebody to get well? Do you pray for?
Oh, I pray for people to get well all the time. All the time. I light candles all the time for people who need whatever that is, prayers because they need to heal or somebody's passed, or for grace, for direction, for guidance. I don't pray for anything physical.
You know, what is it about us? I've had a gazillion prayers answered and I'm still not 100% faith-based. I'm like, why not? I'm like, I've literally prayed for stuff and had it answered the next hour.
Wow.
What about it? Yeah, but that would make me a priest. Yet here I am doing podcasts for a living. Like, what do you think it is about us that like, you get, like, I'm talking about tangible proof. Like,
So you're being very intentional and having faith and attracting the manifestation of what you want. And do I do that in a different way? I don't call it prayer. I don't ask necessarily in the same way, but that's what you're doing. You're creating the space and the energy for what you want to come through. And yeah, that's powerful and it's beautiful.
But it's like, I have quite literally been in a prison cell and prayed for the door to open, and an hour later, for no good reason, the door opens and they're like, hey, just wrote a letter. You didn't do it. Go. Goodbye. And yeah, I had a very stressful summer sending my daughter to college and blah, 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 blah. But my reflex was not to pray about it. It has to dawn on me, like, hey, John, there's a whole, and I've like literally been there, and it's something so wrong with human nature that we're, or the human condition, that we don't like default to spirituality when you get like hardcore proof that it works.
Absolutely. Okay. So I better understand your question. Yes. Yes. And that's, but one of the things Jesus kept saying in the book was, I'm always here for you. Never be afraid to call on me. People often say, and I said this, so the first time that I had a real substantial interaction with Jesus in my life, that you're too busy. I was crying my eyes out. Why are you here? You're too busy. And when he said, he was fully 100% present with me in that moment, there for me for a reason.
Mm.
And I had never been at the place to accept that I might be worthy of that kind of love and attention.
Mm.
And that was that was a place where I went to a new level, where I opened up myself to believing and knowing.
Right.
I was worthy. And what he's saying is, we're all worthy. And he will show up for any of us whenever we need him to be there. All we have to do is ask. That part of having the angels come into our lives, I am always asking the angels to show up or to be somewhere or to do something. And that's free will. That's calling the angels in is an important part of that, asking them to be there and for their help. Now, we all have guardian angels looking out for us, but if you want Archangel Michael to come in and protect you, just call on him. He's there. He's there for all of us. If you ask, you know, the Virgin Mary to be there for you, just to give you grace or just to feel her divine love and her embrace, she's there for you. If you want Archangel Gabriel to come in and purify you, Archangel Raphael to come in and heal you, call them in anytime and they'll be there.
Would you ever consider a book about angels? Because I think that's an under-leveraged part of spirituality.
Yeah. Interesting that you say that. I would. Yeah, absolutely.
I just think that that's a tool that people don't think to use.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And you can get same thing, you can get like physical proof and then just forget to use it again. So
absolutely. Do you think people think that's more religious when I talk about angels than spiritual?
No, I mean, you just wrote a book about what Jesus told you. So I think you've kind of crossed the river. I think you're probably covered there, man.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, no, I hadn't thought. All these things you're giving me to think about, John.
Awesome. Beautiful. All right. The book is Life Quest. It's an amazing book, but I recommend that you buy the book. I recommend that you read like the first couple chapters. Then get a hold of Lisa and do that map thing, because that map thing is crazy. And then if it stops there, great. But once you get told what up, my experience, I keep saying once you get what's up. Once Lisa tells you what's up, it's a giant answer, but it raises more questions. And then that's when I would then say, hey, Lisa, continue the relationship because that map is going to stun you. I promise you that map is going to stun you. It is a crystallization of everything you've been thinking, but were afraid to think, and it's 30%, like just from a dumb John level, it's 30%. How did she? So, and that's fun. Like, that's a fun part of it too. Fun, like to do the map and to say, how did she act is fun too. And by the way, either you or Jesus is a very good writer. The book is an easy read. It's not.
It was designed to be that. That is for sure. Thank you.
Yeah. It's not complicated. It doesn't make you drowsy. It's a good read. So
thank you.
What's your website?
LisaPetrilli.com.
Spell Petrilli for everybody.
P-E-T-R-I-L-L-I.
Beautiful. And I'm going to be reaching out to you next week now that the show is over. Okay. So you can help.
Wonderful.
So that
you Thank you so much.
Tell me what I missed. Did I forget to ask anything?
I don't think so. No, I'd love to work with your audience. I have absolutely enjoyed getting to know you and would love to work with you as well. So yeah, looking forward to seeing where this goes.
You got me. Let's go get them. Listener. Say the website
good.
One more time.
LisaPetrilli.com.
And that's the best place to go?
It is. It's the best place to go. You can download if you want the digital version, you're able to download it for free there. And then the process to connect with me is laid out right there as well.
Cool. You ever get to New York?
Yeah, sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to come in the studio and do one?
I would love to. Sure.
Okay, that would be cool too. Like yeah, I would be willing to work with you in the studio. No, I'm paying you now. You're not doing anything more for me, but to pay you, but to do like to do an hour with you in the studio, so people could see like what that looks like.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so, something to think about.
Think about it. Yep. All right. Okay. I'm hanging up on you, but don't hang up on me because it needs to upload for a second. Lisa Petrilli,
okay.
You're really cool, by the way. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
You're a friend.
Yes, absolutely. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, everyone.